Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. History is on the table again today. We welcome back our friend Catherine Sheehan, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. A native of Troy, Kathy has lectured on various local history topics, including Uncle Sam, the Underground Railroad, public health, women's suffrage, agriculture. You bet. If there's a history topic, she probably knows a lot about it. If you have a question about regional history, give us a call. 800-348-2551. She wrote me an email, said she wanted to talk about murder and mayhem, and I'm all in. 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Catherine Sheehan, history, and your calls coming up. Why, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is Catherine Sheehan. She is Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. A native of Troy, Kathy's career at the museum began when she was an intern from the Public History Program at SUNY Albany. She is currently working, well, this script may be a little old. I don't know. Maybe she finished it. A publication titled Architecture Worth Saving in Rensselaer County, revisited 50 years later. A reminder to my producer, please update the script. Oh, that's me. Catherine has lectured on many local history topics and recently has been a location and historic background advisor for the Gilded Age already. She's appeared on national and international TV. I love having her on this program. It is 800-348-2551. If you want to talk history with Catherine Sheehan, 800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Catherine, I'm going to call you Kathy. Mayor, please don't call. Kathy Sheehan, how are you?
Hello, Ray. It's great to be here.
Oh, my
gosh. Happy fall.
I thought of you a couple of weeks ago because one of my daughters had a photography project for school, and I took a drive out Oakwood Avenue all the way up Route 40. We went to the Buskirk covered bridge and took some pictures, and then we came back, went through Scaticoke, took some beautiful pictures of some of the Agway and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, I got to go to the Oakwood Cemetery, which I have never visited.
Oh, you should have called me.
It is fantastic. Oh, my gosh. I could spend hours and hours there.
It's amazing. It really is. It is one of the most beautiful cemeteries. Truly is. It's part of the Earl Rural Cemetery Movement, and it was consecrated in 1848, so just a little bit later than Albany Rural, a little bit after Albany Rural. The first one of this kind of rural cemetery movement was Mount Auburn Cemetery over near Boston, Cambridge, over that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was a whole new idea. Before, you have to think about early church graveyards. Think about, you've been over to the Cape and stuff and over New England, and you see those very just severe stones all lined up.
Yeah.
And there was a change in how people started to think about death. It was, before it was this very kind of puritanical, your destiny is set. You're either going to heaven, you're going to hell.
Really?
And yeah, well,
So okay.
For some of us, it takes the guesswork out of it.
It certainly leaves you to do whatever you want. That's an interesting philosophy.
Yeah, right. But and they were just always reflected these, the church graveyards, there's no, everything's pretty flat. And those little, stones and things. Cool epitaphs, however, though. I think those really cool early stones. But then they started thinking about, that death is obviously very much a part of life. It's part of nature. That whole kind of ethic started to come in the 1820s and early 1830s. I think Mount Auburn is maybe 1832, something like that. And they bring these beautiful, amazing landscape engineers in to do these. So they bring this J.C. Sidney guy in from Philadelphia. I think it was Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. Philadelphia. And he designs the front part of the cemetery. And it was all about, add some mounds to it. You could have your family plot. You see, you have your little fence. But now you're going to have different kinds of stones and beautiful, amazing specimen trees that are in Oakwood Cemetery, ponds, Which is cool. So if you actually drove through it, which
a little bit.
You kind of go halfway through the cemetery and you cross these two ponds that were built, and you can actually see the remnants of an iron bridge that was there that was done by the same company, the iron bridge that's right down the street here at, in Washington Park in
Albany. Really?
Yeah, it looked just like that. And that whole part of the cemetery was designed by the first black graduate of RPI, who is Garnet Douglas Baltimore.
Ah.
And he designs that second half, and that's where kind of all the Gilded Age era, and you see all these beautiful mausoleums.
Oh, my gosh.
They're amazing. And it's just, it's like you're walking through art.
To me, it was almost like a very ornate city. There's an old punk rock song called City of the Dead Clash. It came to mind. But there's a big building.
The crematorium, the Gardner Earl Crematorium.
It's a huge building with a spire and everything else.
Amazing. Yeah, did you see the gargoyle hanging off the end?
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, you got to go back. So that building's 1890, it's finished, and it has Tiffany windows in it, something like 8 different kinds of marble from around the world. It was done, Gardner Earl was the Earl family was one of the big collar cuff manufacturers.
It was so sad.
That was in Trey's
son. It was
son. For their son.
The older folks outlived their son, and it's a sad thing. It made me sad.
Well, it also was, what was, again, interesting is, and it's something we don't even think about now, or not too much anyway, cremation, that was a new thing. They were doing it in Europe because, you know, they don't have space for these big, you can't do acres and acres of cemeteries in Europe. So it was much used faster over there. So he went on the grand tour. Obviously, this is a very wealthy young man, and he knew he was not well. He was going to be sick. And he said, no, you know, I want to be cremated. Well, they had to go out to Buffalo. That's where he had to be cremated when he passed away. So his parents end up building this at a cost they kept burying the bills. So nobody really knows what it costs.
It must have cost a lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Millions of dollars. Yeah. Because the Tiffany windows alone in there. There's Tiffany. Beautiful.
Spectacular.
So you have to take a tour. There's lots of tours. Go to Oakwood Cemetery's website. I do tours in there in the summer.
It's right here in the script.
Yeah. So it's just, it's a very peaceful place. And it's really quite lovely.
Now, I couldn't read some of the older headstones. Were there some that predated the actual Oakwood Cemetery there?
Yes.
Okay. What's the earliest one? I thought I saw some from the late 1700s.
You did. You would have seen. There's some there from, I think, 1780, maybe, somewhere around there. Yeah. No, what happened was is that as Oakwood became a very popular, it's like the place to go. People would reinter. They would move from, if anybody familiar with Troy, there was a village burial ground on State and Second Street. They moved up to Oakwood. There's one out on Route 66, Pauline Avenue. You know, when the new cemetery became the Shishi Place, we're gonna relocate everybody.
People are dying to get in there.
I knew I was waiting for that.
Thank you very much.
So sometimes they just move the stones. Sometimes they bought new ones. We love that phone call. People call me a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, I think I have a cemetery in my house. I said, why do you say that? Well, we were lifting up these stones and it's a gravestone. I said, no, it probably is not. I said, it probably was the fact that somebody got a new stone and used it for a sidewalk.
Paperweight. Catherine Sheehan is our guest today, Executive Director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Got way off topic here. 800-348-2551. She wanted to talk about murder and mayhem, and then I got on the cemetery topic. So what's with the murder and the mayhem?
Well, I was looking at, there's the Pomeroy Foundation. You know, everybody knows about the blue and yellow historic markers that are, you know, dotting the landscape, you know, all around the country and stuff. And which was New York State Historic Marker Program goes back to the 1920s.
Yeah.
But the Pomeroy Foundation did an interesting thing around 2015, 2016, where they started a new thing called Legends and Lores.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So it's fun. And you'll see those are usually in red. They're not in the blue and yellow. And they're getting to be very popular. And the difference being is that if you were applying for the blue and yellow one, you have to show all your primary sources and things. So you have a story to tell,
right,
or, you know, a building that you're documenting, things like that. The legends and lore, it's a little bit more flexible.
Yeah, you can make stuff up.
Well, I would wouldn't go that far. There's usually, you know, legends always have some semblance of truth to them. But you don't have to bring every last primary source in for them to get it. And it's, think of like Ichabod Crane. There's one down in Columbia County that the teacher is loosely based on this teacher that
right.
was in down in Columbia County. And that's what, you know, it's the legend of Sleepy Hollow. And,
exactly.
And Ichabod. So, you know, there's, so they're kind of fun. So you're getting a little bit of these stories that are, you know, they're probably, there's truth in some
a little
of these
truth.
Things. Little truth. And then, you know, how things.
Like
you
a
know,
telephone tree.
Exactly. Tea table gossip here.
You know, speaking of murder and mayhem, and we speak about this often on this program, and the number is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk history with Catherine Sheehan. There was a legend, not a legend, actually a true story, and I don't know how far back it goes, about a woman on your side of the river, a college-age girl, and she came home and went missing by some pond on that side of the river. And I can't, for the life of me, it just came to me, remember the pond. Do you remember that story?
I do know that story. And it actually spawned the TV show Twin Peaks.
That's it. That's it. Quickly, before we take a break, just give me the précis on that.
It is Hazel Drew. It is the unsolved, and there is actually, they just dedicated the marker. They have a Legends and Lore marker in the town of Sand Lake, like, last week. I mean, literally just happened.
That's probably
why I was thinking
about
it. You might have saw it in the paper. Yeah. And so Hazel Drew is a young woman, comes in from the farm. She's living out in Postinkill, comes into Troy. Nothing good ever comes in Troy at that time. You know, they didn't want these young farm girls to be coming into the city, working in factories. You know,
right.
there was all this talk about that. Goes out to, on a, you know, to, puts it's kind of an it's really it's a very complicated story, but you know, in the long run, she ends up putting a bag in the Troy Union Station, then goes out on the, you know, on the buggy. Someone sees her going up the hill in Taberton, going up Taberton
That's
Road
right.
up
yeah.
in the mountains, never to be seen again until about 3 days later. It was like 5th of July. She's found floating face up in Teal's Pond.
And
it's still technically it's an unsolved murder. Now there's been a movie that's done about her. There's been some books written about her, and it's an interesting topic. It still comes up all the time. There's our friends out at the Sand Lake Historical regularly do lectures about the murder of Hazel Drew.
Is anybody still digging?
Not literally
digging, but
no. But you know, it was really interesting. It was with the kind of investigative stuff they can do now. I think they've exhausted everything else, and the topic came up, well, do we exhume her body at some point and do DNA? You know, and it's like,
okay.
Yeah, I know.
I love this. Let's take a break. Catherine Sheehan's our guest. It's History Today, 800-348-2551. VoxPop at WAMC.org if you want to email. We'll be back. All right, listen, everybody who threw some money in the kitty today during the roundtable panel, a special panel we did, thank you. It was a great morning, over $20,000 today. You were remarkable. That's the great news. The not so great news, we're going to ask you again. If you haven't done this, it's coming again. We need your support. The fund drive begins October 14th, and we want to fill that lockbox before the fund drive. And so you can do it right now. You can do it 24/7. WAMC.org. Make a pledge. It doesn't have to be 100. It doesn't have to be 1,000. 10, 5, whatever you got, whatever you're comfortable with, WAMC.org. We're joined today by Catherine Sheehan, the executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Wow, we've had an interesting start to the show. A lot of death.
All
right.
It's October.
That's right. Monstover.
It's dark. Monstover.
All right, let's see. Let's go a couple emails here, and then we'll hit the phones. This is from Larry. Larry says, I've always heard that the potato chip was invented by a chef at the Sanssouci Hotel in Saratoga. Sanssouci? Baseball was invented by Abner Doubleday, who lived in Boston Spa. Any truth to these statements?
Well, baseball wasn't invented by Abner Doubleday, but he gets a Legends and Lore marker, too, up there. It's right on Route 9 in Boston. You can see it up there in Boston Spa. You know, he was in the Civil War, though.
Well, he was involved with the popularization of the basically English sport and making it American. Whatever. There is some evidence that they were playing it prior to that, and I've seen little bits and pieces, like I think some military games and stuff.
Yeah, there it was Rounders, I think it was called called then, you know. But and it was, and I think they've traced it, you know, Cooperstown. It was like, so, you know, take that claim first, and nothing against
that. No, I love Cooperstown.
Love Cooperstown.
I love the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame. It's amazing.
Sure,
but I think it was actually over in Pittsfield. I think they've traced it back farther. Rounders are over in our friends across the border.
Okay.
Over in Pittsfield.
Well, let's hear from our listeners and let's start a fight here.
Let's start a fight out here. Yeah.
All right. And what about the potato chips?
So the potato chips, I have heard about that one too. That was, and I can't remember, I get mixed up between the potato chip one and the pie a la mode, because there was the Cambridge Hotel. This is a call to Joe Donahue, right? Because he's up that way.
Yeah, I know. And it's, you know, coincidentally, he loves pie a la mode.
Pie a la mode was up in the Cambridge Hotel, but the potato chip, there was apparently a customer who was not happy about the way the potato was cooked. So it wasn't cooked, so he sliced the thing so ridiculously thin and fried them up, and they would say, here, kind of as a, all right, here, take that.
Here's some
spite
for you.
And they loved it, and they went crazy over it.
Yeah. You see, anger and disgust can lead to great things. 800-348-2551 is the number. If I give the fund drive number, forgive me. We did some pitching this morning, and again, everybody was fantastic. All right, let's see. This is from Mary Ellen, who sends a red and white picture.
Oh.
It's a bed bug hill. This one is near Cooperstown. Oh. There are several funny stories. It says, inspired by a 19th century migrant hop picker who insisted he would not return because local bed bugs were as big as squirrels. And that's from the New York Folklore Society, the William C. Pomeroy Foundation, 2017. There you go.
Yep, there's your legends and lore. So,
all right, one more email and then to the phones. 800-348-2551. What do you know of the old settlement known as Doodletown in northern Rockland County? You know anything about Doodletown?
I don't. That's a little way or farther south than the kind of capital region. I've never heard of that.
It sounds familiar to me. I must have driven by it at one time.
Yeah, maybe you were down that way.
Possibly.
Doodletown. I'll have to look at that.
It was a great Billy Joel song. You remember that?
No.
Well, they're living here in Doodletown.
Oh, okay.
No, not really.
No.
All right, let's go to Julie and Troy. Julie, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about the SUNY building in downtown Troy that's on the river. I think it used to be the headquarters for the railroad.
Oh, sure.
And I was told that the man that built that had a dispute with Teddy Roosevelt. Excuse me. And so he put a gargoyle on that building that looks like a kind of a grotesque version of Teddy Roosevelt. And so I was just curious if you knew about it and could tell me more, and also possibly where that gargoyle is located on the building.
Is that in Albany?
Well, which
in Albany, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, in Albany.
So the huge D&H building that is now a SUNY administrated building.
Oh, that was done by architect Marcus Reynolds.
Oh, yeah.
A very noted architect.
And did he hate Teddy Roosevelt?
Not that I had heard about that one, but
I've never heard this story.
I love it. I knew this was going to be a fun one. We're going to get lots of good stories today. I had not heard about that one. I mean, gargoyles were very popular. I mean, we were just talking about that at the Oakwood Crematorium. There's a gargoyle hanging off that one too.
Yeah,
you know, that became the thing. And of course, you've got the half moon up top too. The wonderful weather vane, way up at the top of the spire.
Cool.
But that's an interesting
one.
So
anyway,
we'll
I'll have to look.
That one.
I'll go downtown and I'll take a look and see if I find any gargoyles. Of course, Teddy Roosevelt looked like a gargoyle, so it might have just been a coincidence. Hey, Julie, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's Catherine Sheehan. It's History Today. We'd love to hear from you. And, okay, you know what? We have information on Doodletown because we're going to Peter in Rosendale. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Ray, how you doing there?
Good, man.
I used to work for the Harriman Park.
Ah.
And Doodletown It was still in existence until like the 40s or so, something like that. It was a small village right on the Hudson River below Bear Mountain.
Okay.
And some of the buildings are still there. There are actually trails you can take from like the Bear Mountain Administration Building, that big parking lot.
Yeah.
You can hike off to the old Doodletown remnants. But it was one of those things like eminent domain. It was bought up and the Palisades Interstate Park was established. It was back in Roosevelt's time when he was governor.
I was going to say, I wondered if it was the Palisades or the Taconic Parkway going through that, and they basically plowed through to do that.
Go ahead,
and what it wasn't so much like a really early settlement. It was like a later on settlement kind of thing. But, it was just a small village and had a school and maybe like, I don't know, maybe like a couple of hundred residents, not really big.
So they were all displaced by FDR.
Yeah, because that whole park thing kind of was a good move, that it made good recreation close to New York City.
Yeah, I see.
Most of the lakes, 90% of the lakes are man-made. There's only one or two natural lakes in all of Harriman.
Huh.
But that's also where, you know, that's where the revolution happened. That's where the chains were strung across the Hudson River. The mines are right there. The Hogan Mine was where some of the iron ore came from to forge the chains to go across the Hudson River. So pretty cool place. And I was lucky enough to be in a corporate grant from Reader's Digest to do trail maintenance. And it was one of the best 8 years summer, part-time summer job, not like a whole year round, just a couple months of the summer. And it was pretty good. I have to add this.
Hang on. Yeah, Kathy has a question for you.
Did you find any extant things like chimneys or, root cellars, things like that they might not have actually plowed under?
In Doodletown, there's still foundational evidence and some stone walls.
Yep.
Wow.
There's some of the old roads that are like hand-set cobble to go up the mountainside.
Oh, cool.
That is cool. It's a beautiful area down there.
Yeah, there's a place close to the Appalachian Trail called the Timp Pass, and that is like a handmade road that's like about a mile long.
Mm-hmm.
It's really pretty amazing. They had a lot of time in those days to do stuff like that. I just got to say, Ray Graft, you are our pinch hitter. In the post office, we had something called the utility carrier.
Yeah.
And he knew all the routes in the post office, and you are the guy who can fill in anywhere. And you're like, you're the pinch hitter of the utility carrier of the DJ. So, but
story of my life, brother.
Last week when you used the term, I kind of dig it, that this new format of raising funds and intermittent special roundtables, I said, Ray Graff said dig it?
Yeah.
I'm becoming a lifelong member.
Hey, man,
thank
you.
You inspired me.
I remember that pledge coming in, and thank you for doing that. I got to tell you, I've listened to a lot of jazz, so you get the lingo. You know what I mean?
Well, I have a good neighbor. He's a professional musician, 72 years old, and we went through the whole euphemisms of what was cool, what was slick, what was hip, what was... And it goes right on up until the modern, where things became deaf, stupid, and et cetera.
Modern terms. I like it. You're an old soul, too, Peter.
And as we say in Maine, which is where I'm coming back from, I lived there for 13 years. I came back here to where I grew up. Up in Maine, they would always say, wicked awesome.
All right.
But Vox Pop is wicked awesome and right on. And for anybody who can get down to Harriman, it's just really amazingly historical.
Amazingly historical. Peter,
I gotta say,
man, thanks for the pledge. Thanks for the kind words. And thanks for the info on Doodletown. 800-348-2551. We have smart listeners, Kathy.
Yes, we do.
They always do.
I know. I always learn more when I come out of here than every time.
It's great that you get some leads.
I get some leads.
I want to know how they came up with the name Doodletown.
Doodletown. I know.
You know? There's a bird. Isn't there a doodle bird? I did a bird show yesterday.
Bird show yesterday.
I don't know. The thing is, my memory is so bad. I remember you and vaguely. Tom, Saratoga, you're on. Hello. It's this road noise. Ground control to Major Tom. Are you there?
Hey, I didn't realize you said Tom. Yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm from Saratoga Springs, and
in 1975, in fifth grade, we got a grant from New York State to make a movie on the history of Saratoga Springs, which we did. And there I learned that George Crumb at the Riley's Lake House on Lake Saratoga Lake in Saratoga Springs invented the potato chip when a client was not happy with the way the potatoes were prepared, and they were sent back, and he cut them up really thin and fried them and put a ton of salt on them.
Delicious.
That's cool. I hope that I'll have to, my colleague Lauren Roberts, who is the Saratoga County historian, I wonder if they have that film yet that you did when you were in fifth grade.
You know, I've looked for that in the Saratoga County library system, and I'm not able to find it. It's a shame because it was. We worked for the entire year on that. We all did skits. We all made our costumes. We all wrote all the skits. We went around to all the places in Saratoga, Congress Park, and you know, and the battlefield, and everywhere, and just all kinds of really cool. It was a great film. I'm sorry that I can't find it now.
Yeah, I would imagine you were probably part of the Yorkers program, which was a program of the New York State Historical Association, and they had, you know, there basically was like a history club for kids, which kind of still exists. Now we have the New York State History Day competition stuff there, and the New York State Archives
Awards.
Being
11 at the time.
Yeah. Yep.
Being 11 at the time, I wasn't worried too much about where the money came from. We had a blast, though.
Hey, Tom, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Catherine Sheehan is here. By the way, in the introduction, I said you're currently working on a publication titled Architecture Worth Saving in Rensselaer County Revisited. It's been done for years, hasn't
it?
No. You're still working on
it? No, I'm still working on it. And I am guaranteeing that it's going to be – we have our 100th anniversary coming up in 2027. It's going to be done before 2027, I promise.
How are you going to do that? When do you have time?
I know. I'm going to have to semi-retire.
don't do that yet.
No. Aaron, no, I'll still do a story, and I will give up being a director, but I'll just still be a story.
You know what? Ultimately, if you retire, you're still coming on this show.
There you go.
So, Aaron in Greenfield, Massachusetts writes in, can you tell me a little bit about King Philip's War and the Massasoit Native Peoples of Massachusetts? I'm working on ladders this afternoon for a painting job in lovely Charlemont, Massachusetts, and can hear you both loud and clear. Hello, Aaron. So what do you know about King Philip's War?
The King Philip's War more is of what was going on up near Lake George, over in the Massachusetts area. And it's interesting. They were just – I was just reading something in the paper about – again, it's going to be more related to Lake George of all those the early wars that were going on even before the American Revolution, and how they have been uncovering kind of all these hospitals and where soldiers died and things in around Lake George. And, you know, Fort William Henry used to have soldiers' remains.
Sure.
And there was over, I forgot it, not Canada Street, but one of the other ones, they were digging for an apartment complex and found basically it was, I think it was a hospital or small, they died of smallpox.
Oh,
what's fascinating,
that's scary.
Though, it's scary. It is, but what's been fascinating is the kind of this archaeological work that they've been doing to see, you know, what, you know, they can go in now and again do this DNA and see all the different things that these poor young soldiers, they're a baby. I mean, they were just teenagers.
Right. You know? But I mean, if you're digging, and I don't know the lifespan of some of these viruses, but your phone is going, aren't you a fancy historian? Sorry. You have a fancy phone. You know, you do this digging, and I have no idea how long viruses can lay dormant. But if you're digging in and you find somebody who died of smallpox, is it dangerous?
I hope not.
Yeah. Why? Have you done that?
No. But I know lots of people, lots of archaeologists who have.
Yeah.
They study, ash pits and cisterns and things like that. And, you know, everybody's outhouse. You know, they literally look at, they look and see how people, it's amazing how they can see what people died of, you know, and they looked at vitamin levels and, you know, would have died of rickets. It's absolutely
in the dirt.
What was human waste.
That is absolutely repellent.
It is, but you're right, but it's also fascinating.
It really is. Yeah. You know, another question I had, and we'll take a break and then we'll get back to the phones and such. 800-348-2551. A couple of years ago, and this happens every now and again in Albany, I'm sure it happens in a lot of these old cities,
They were digging. There was a water main break, something. Mm-hmm. And they found one of those original logs that were the pipes.
Right.
And I'm not specifically asking about Albany, but in general, when there are digs, construction digs, how often over the course of the last 100 years do construction people just blow it off and continue on the work because they're on a deadline?
Yeah, I'm sure that happens a lot.
Yeah. Didn't happen here in Albany.
Didn't happen here. Yeah, no, it didn't happen in Troy either. Actually, I love nothing more when I see them start digging. I'll be standing right there with the guys looking down in the hole.
I do, too. I do, too. I want to get a metal detector.
I want to get the metal detector. They constantly dig up old wood pipes from the water system.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah, and they're, I mean, I know just Troy alone, their early water system is like 1820, 1830,
yeah,
when they're piping things off the hill. You know, we got all that gravity with all the hills, as does Albany.
But I mean,
yeah,
they're still there. And
still
and yet
there.
You have clay, yeah, pipes that have dissolved. You have galvanized pipes that fall apart and cost a lot of money to replace. And yet the wood ones
still
from
there.
200 years ago. All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's History with Kathy Sheehan from the Hart Clewitt Museum. We'll be back. Quincy Jones doing Killer Joe, which was written by Benny Golson, who just passed a couple of weeks ago, one of the all-time greats, and that is a great song. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. Catherine Sheehan is here from the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian already. Working on anything over there in Rensselaer County?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, tons.
Yeah?
Yeah. We have all sorts of programs coming up. We've got great tours. We are doing Murder Mayhem tours, for, ooh, course, during the month
how do
of
I get
October.
Involved?
HartClewitt.org.
Okay.
To,
that,
yep.
Okay.
And we have wonderful workshops, writers' workshops coming up. So, again, go to our schedule. We're doing a panel discussion with League of Women Voters.
Oh, neat.
On the Equal Rights ERA,
yeah,
for women. So that is going, I guess.
So
Hart
Clewitt,
that's
not hyphenated, is it?
No.
Okay.
It's not. October 16th is the ERA panel.
Okay.
And at 5:30. So
splendid.
Invite you to come in. So I have, because WMC has the best listeners, and I got a response from a friend of mine who is an architect at John G. Waite Preservation Architects Associate, Bill Brandow. Thanks,
yep.
Bill.
Okay.
And he wrote about the gargoyles.
Oh, the Teddy
D&H.
Roosevelt.
Yes.
Okay, let's hear it.
So here was what he said. He said, William Barnes, who owned the Albany Evening Journal, their headquarters was the southern part of the building. He had three of the 8 gargoyles made with human heads. One was Barnes, another was Marcus Reynolds, who I mentioned was the architect, and a third was Teddy Roosevelt.
Ha!
After their tiff, Barnes placed the TR bust in the least visible northeast corner with his head right against the slate roof.
Wow.
And their tiff occurred right during construction of the building.
Oh, so, and so it should still be there. Then it's on the yeah. Cohoes side of that, you know, north.
North, right.
Along the river.
Right.
Okay.
Now we all have to go look at that.
We got to go look at the gargoyles.
So thanks, Bill Brandow.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Doodletown has become quite a topic here, and so let's go to Eric in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Eric, you're on with the Doodletown. Go.
Thanks so much. Another footnote. Peter did a great job describing the village. I lived on Doodletown Road in Ankrum for 3.5 years, did a little research, and I think I found an origin story for the name.
Okay.
And that is that revolutionary soldiers used to play their doodle bags up in the mountains of Bear Mountain State Park to taunt the British soldiers.
Interesting. What's a doodle bag?
Yeah,
can you say it on the radio?
It's a bagpipe, Ray.
Oh, I understand. I got you. That's cool. I never heard that name before.
Yeah,
well, that's a great one. Hey, Eric, thanks a lot. Let's go. Let's continue to talk about the Doodletown.
Doodletown.
We'll go to Cornwall. It's Henry. You're on. Cornwell. I guess.
Oh, hi. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. I live about maybe 15 miles from there. When my kids were younger, I used to take them there and take the grandkids there. If you're right off 9W, you can go hiking. You can make the Doodletown in about 10, 15 minutes.
Cool.
And it was a village that was surrounded by the Harriman Park after the Harriman family donated the land.
Right.
And it is kind of the East Coast equivalent of a ghost town. It's kind of sad in a way. They do have placards and pictures of the homes that were there and things like that. And what's interesting is two family graveyards, not real big, but it's interesting. You're not really supposed to trespass in there, but you can see them.
Oh, that's very
interesting. There's also two there's two trails that go there, 1777 and 1779 for the, I think, British and American troops both used it because it's very close to West Point.
Huh.
So I just thought I'd add that in.
Henry. Oh, that's cool. I'm glad that they didn't reinter the graveyards that they've left there. It's interesting. You see them dotted all over the place, and I love sometimes, like, that's become a big Boy Scout project. Sometimes they, like the Eagle Scout, will have to do their big project, and they will go in and they'll do a census of these family burial grounds. They'll clean them up. They clean the stones and just, you know, maybe put a new fence around them so that people will respect that space. And I love that they didn't take them out. Good for them.
Henry, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Are there any ghost towns in the Troy or Rensselaer County area?
Well, a lot of the area, well, you've been up by the Tom Hanick Reservoir. They buried
underwater. But are there any that are standing?
Not really. Most everything that's still there is still there. I mean, you know, it's maybe changed a little bit, like because Route 2 was rerouted and things like that a little bit. But yeah, most stuff is still there.
Catherine Sheehan is our guest today. It's History on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. And a couple of emails, and then we'll go right back to the phones. This is from John. Can Kathy talk about Al Troy Island Amusement Park? I've seen the plaque on the Corning Preserve bike path, but otherwise never heard of it.
Oh, that was interesting. That was a little bit later. That's kind of a Gilded Age era thing. And near to where, if those of you who were around here a long time, be the area near Two Guys. Between Two Guys. That's where we were talking about that one other time this summer, near Hawkins Stadium. That whole area. Yeah. There was an island too, though. And when they redredged the Hudson, that island disappeared, and it came, probably it's now part of 787.
Yeah.
But you're kind of, you know, south of the Mainlands Bridge. And but yeah, there was like amusement park areas. There were so many of those things. So cool.
We went up to the tugboat roundup
Waterford
a few weeks ago. I don't remember. It was a few weeks ago. Yeah. And in checking out that whole area and checking the lock and everything else, there is, I don't know whether it's a peninsula or a little island just out in the water there, and people were fishing on it.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, there's a ton of those little things. I don't know if you took the time and walked around Peebles Island, which is where the Field Services Bureau for New York State and the Conservation lives.
So.
If you were on the Waterford part, you would have crossed that railroad bridge, which is now, you know, it's half pedestrian and half not railroad anymore. It was the old railroad bridge. But yeah, these little islands, there's a couple of them like that, and you can see them. Depending on the Cohoes side, or if you're over on the Peebles Island side, people walk across, and they're fishing down there.
Any history there? Anything? Artifacts to find?
Kosciusko, he did the embattlements during the Revolutionary War. Thaddeus Kosciusko, of course, our Northway Bridge.
So how do you say it properly? Every time you go up the bridge on the Northway, you say,
I don't know, but
Kosciusko.
I can hear my Polish mother-in-law going,
You got it wrong,
Kathy.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Tom in Woodstock. Tom, you're on.
Hey, Ray, how are you?
Good, welcome.
Thank you. Am I allowed to raise two topics?
It depends on what they are, I suppose.
Doodletown reminded me of a place about halfway between Woodstock and Saugerties, which is now called Veteran, but it used to be called Tootlum, T-O-O-D-L-U-M.
Huh.
Apparently, the local people decided to honor the soldiers during World War II and changed the name to Veteran, but there's an ongoing Tootlum Society that's trying to return the name, you know, to its original Tootlum, and Doodletown reminded me of that. That's probably somewhat less interesting than this other subject, which I'll just raise and leave maybe with your panel.
Okay.
And that is the long path, which begins at a subway station in New York City and travels all the way to Thatcher Park, north of Albany. And it was created by Vince Schaefer, who lived in Troy and invented seeding rain clouds. But he also established the Long Path in the 1930s. And it actually runs to this day from a subway station just south of the George Washington Bridge all the way up along the Hudson River and into Thatcher Park. So,
Yeah, I'm not much of a hiker, believe it or not. But I've heard of this, and I find it fascinating.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's been work on work on that trail. I think it's I think it's incorporated now into the Heritage Trail. I could be wrong.
I think you're right. That's but maybe where I heard
it
of
is.
It.
Yeah.
Hey, great call, Tom. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We'll go to Patrick in Albany. Patrick, you're on with Kathy Sheehan.
Oh, hello. How are you? Great show.
Thanks.
I had two quick topics. One, you had a caller that from Charlemont, Mass, that had called just a little while ago.
Yeah.
He was asking about King Philip War. That was in the 1640s, 1650s era, and mostly fought in Rhode Island and southeastern Mass and southeastern Connecticut. I think what you were referring to about the archaeological stuff near Lake George is the French and Indian War.
Yeah.
But this was almost 100 years before that, was the demise of the Mashpee, the Wampanoag, and the Narragansetts. But I had a specific question for your guest. What is the roots of the Connolly statue in Troy, and how did it end up there? And if you know anything about that, I would love to hear that. He was Irish patriot and a trade union leader.
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, he was. He actually lived in Troy for only about 2 years. He was actually working for an insurance company, but he was very much involved with supporting union activity. And the statue is right in Riverfront Park, right behind Uncle Sam's statue, which is near where the bus stop, the CDTA bus stop, is. And but he made a lot of inroads with working with union organizers, and then he went back to Ireland, of course, right where the Easter Uprising, and he was executed. So he's a hero in Ireland. I mean, there's Connolly Street's named after him, and a train station, and so it was interesting that he did end up in Troy at a time when, you know, unions were organized, and Troy was a real hotbed of union activity in the 19th century, and particularly in the late 19th century, really beginning 1864 when, you know, but Kate Mullaney starts the first successful collar laundress's union. Mm. And then you had the iron molders union. So there was a lot of, you know, union, really strong union activity. That would have brought him here. Yeah.
Patrick.
That's a great question.
And do you know when that statue was erected, when the Connolly statue was put up?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It was probably I can't believe it. I think it was probably almost 20 years ago now when that was done.
All right, Patrick. Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Catherine Sheehan is here from the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City Historian. Let's see here. Let's go to another phone, and then we'll try to take a few emails here before we wrap it. Kathy in Saratoga Springs, you're on.
Hi. First of all, I love the Hart Clewitt Museum. I dropped off some artifacts from the Arrow Shirt Company that my father and grandfather worked for pretty much their entire lives. And it's a wonderful little museum.
Oh, thank you.
I also was calling about King Philip's War. My eighth grade grandfather, Nathan Fix, was a lieutenant in that war. And it's considered the first Indian War. Mm-hmm. It was 1675 to 1676. And it's named after the Indian chief from the Wampanoag tribe, mm-hmm. who had adopted the name Philip because his father had been friendly with the Plymouth colony.
Oh, okay.
And so somehow it got named King Philip's War after that particular Indian Native American.
That is fascinating.
Interesting. Yeah, that is fascinating. Yeah.
Well, thanks,
Kathy.
Yeah,
and it was definitely in the northeastern woodlands, somewhere in the, you know, like the previous caller said, Plymouth, Massachusetts area, northern Rhode Island, that area.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I went to a site that was actually out of Martha's Vineyard.
Oh,
too.
Okay.
That could be.
I'm not quite sure how widespread it was, but mm-hmm. it's you know, obviously I have mixed feelings about my ancestor participating in a war against the Native people, but yeah. it's fascinating stuff to learn
sure
about.
Is.
It is.
And
it
thank
is.
You for the call, Kathy. This email came in from Alicia. What's the story about that supposedly very haunted spot next to Troy Country Club, Forest Hill Cemetery?
I was wondering when that question was going to come.
Oh, yeah? Why? Scary stuff?
So it's an interesting... So the forest, like we, as we talked about Oakwood, there are this group of investors who thought, well, Oakwood Cemetery is going, you know, gangbusters now. I think we should, you know, jump on the bandwagon. So they actually hire the Garnet Douglas Baltimore, the same landscape engineer, to lay out that cemetery. Much smaller. There's actually still kind of a mausoleum in there. Very quickly, these investors, they were from out of town and stuff, and people didn't really buy into it all that much. There's not that many burials there. And it was basically abandoned for a long time, and that's when, of course, you know, the story started. To be honest with you, I think there's more... I think there was more college, you know, pranks that were going on. Yeah, they talk about, you know, bleeding statues and all this other stuff. And yeah.
So you haven't come across any of that?
No.
Will you let me know if you do?
Yeah, of course right. I would. You know,
this here's an interesting email from Deborah. Growing up, I lived in Nassau on Church Street, which is also Route 20. My sister had a friend who lived in a Gothic house right behind the red light in Nassau and across the street from an old inn that, when I was younger, was still in use. In my sister's, my sister's friend told her that there was a passageway under Route 20 that connected the homestead to her house, and it had been used for the Underground Railroad. I just wondered how much you knew about the Underground Railroad in that particular area.
The Underground Railroad was very active there. I would hesitate to go on about tunnels. I think most of those, we talk about legends and lore and things like that, those turn out to really be, you know, just stories. You know, obviously they were helping freedom seekers, but you didn't really need to be digging under the ground and digging tunnels. You wouldn't have spent that time to do that, first off, and that's a huge expense to keep those things up. However, many houses did have, there's documented things where people have fake walls and fake doors.
Yeah.
Like our Knickerbocker Mansion in Scaghtikoke is a great example of that. They actually have a door that would have gone down its basement, and there's a false door behind it, and that was documented in family correspondence as well. So, you know...
Does this go back to the Revolutionary War or the War of 1812? Because I think you and I have talked about this. There's a church, Catholic church, down in Albany. I think it's St. Mary's, down by the Capitol. I was doing some TV stuff years and years ago, and they had it. There's a tunnel underneath, and there seemed to be some question about where it came from and where it went. They wouldn't let me go down, but presumably it could have gone across the street to the Capitol. I don't know, but there are a lot of these old tunnels around.
Well, there's tough, but they're root cellars. I mean, some of it,
not in a church.
Not in a church, but yeah, it's. Yeah, I mean, yes, I'm sure there are, but most of the time I am a skeptic until someone can prove me otherwise.
All right. Oh, by the way, Valerie writes and says you have an incredible memory. True or not true?
It depends. I can't remember someone's name in a minute, but
well, I'm with you there 100%. All right, let's see if we can
thank you.
Grab another email here. All right, very quickly. Out Taberton Road today. Notice the new Hazel Drew sign, but to the point. We were with the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance Trail Crew cleaning up Geyser Preserve. We cleaned up the Perigo Hill, 1,873 feet above sea level. One of the leaders mentioned that she had heard one of the cellar holes we passed were the remnants of the Patroon Van Rensselaer's hunting lodges. Any truth?
Oh, I'm sure they. I mean, the Van Rensselaer, they were all over the place out there. So that wouldn't surprise me at all if it was.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're about out of time, Catherine Sheehan. How do people find out more? You have a lot going on at the Hart Kluwit.
We do. Go to our website. Like I said, we've got this ER panel. We've got some great writing workshops coming up. Our friend Amy Halloran might be doing one for us soon, too. I know she's coming Friday.
She's going to be on here on Friday.
Yeah.
Well, you see, your memory's better than mine.
But so come to hartkluwit.org, HARTCLUET, and you can send me an email at ksheehan@hartkluwit.org if you have any other questions.
Splendid job. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Ray. Always love it.
See you again soon. Support comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany.
Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, careersintransitionllc.com. Vision XL Lake Katrine, continuing a commitment to patient care, working to provide optical products and techniques while adhering to safety protocols. Appointments at 845-336-6310. And the Borough Gift Shop, Dalton Avenue, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, featuring plants, crystals, home and garden decor, minerals for collectors, and more. Open daily from 11 to 7. Social media at Explore the Borough. Once again, thanks to Catherine Sheehan for joining us today. She goes by Kathy, but it causes some confusion, so we'll call her Catherine. Thanks again to her for being here. Thank you for listening. Great calls, great emails. Apologies if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our affable engineer. Phone screened by Andrea Leon. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Tony Yang will be back to answer your computer questions if he's well enough. If not, I don't know. We'll punt. See you tomorrow.